Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. The time is 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, June the 21st, the start of summer. If a student brings a weapon onto school property, the school's zero tolerance policy typically would mean that child would face a severe punishment, including expulsion. Zero tolerance policies can be found around the nation and around this state. Just last month, the Sheboygan School District announced its new policy against bomb threats, a zero tolerance policy for calling in or writing a bomb threat. But other communities are rethinking them. Madison amended its zero-tolerance policy on weapons some time ago when a student was suspended, actually, I think expelled for 1 year for bringing a knife to school for a science class demonstration. There was an outcry, and the zero-tolerance policy was amended. This hour, our guest will talk about why more schools should reconsider their zero-tolerance policies, and we invite you to join in the conversation, too. What kinds of zero-tolerance rules are in your community, and do you think they are effective in keeping schools safe? Or do you think some of the rules can be taken too far and hurt good students? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Cecil Reynolds. He's a professor of education psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University and chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero Tolerance Task Force. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. Our discussion is prompted by an Associated Press article this week about a backlash against these zero-tolerance policies in schools all over the nation. Lawmakers and school boards in several states are deciding to or trying to alter their zero-tolerance policies. You think this is a good move to alter these zero-tolerance policies?
Absolutely. We do believe that zero-tolerance policies in the public schools need to be altered for a variety of reasons. As some of your listeners may not know, but zero-tolerance policies came about as a result of the so-called war on drugs. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, was the first to develop zero-tolerance policies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were designed to aid them in confiscating property on which drugs were hidden. And they were seizing cars, boats, even a charitable foundation's research ship valued at millions and millions of dollars was seized one time because a crew member had less than an ounce of marijuana on board the ship. And what the Drug Enforcement Agency found was that zero-tolerance policies didn't work, and they could not find a way to implement them that was fair and equitable or just. And so they have actually abandoned those policies as unworkable.
Yeah, what do you mean they didn't work? Isn't that a big deterrent? Don't do drugs or have drugs, or else we're going to take your property away from you?
Well, they didn't work because they really couldn't be applied in any kind of just manner. For example, this charitable organization who had a multi-million-dollar research ship seized because a crew member had slipped a small amount of marijuana on board the ship. No one really considered that to be just, but under the rules, the ship was forfeited.
Mm-hmm.
And we see applications like that occurring in the public schools. The public schools picked up on this idea of zero tolerance, which on the surface sounds like an excellent policy. And indeed, the intent of zero tolerance policies is a good one. We have no quarrel with the intention of zero tolerance policies. But the research on how they've been implemented and the results of their implementation tell us that children are actually more likely to be harmed overall by these policies than helped. They don't create a safer environment at school, it turns out. That actually children's anxiety levels increase in schools that have the most widespread zero-tolerance policies. the children actually become fearful at school, not of the actions of other students as being aggressive or fearing other students. They become more fearful of the rules and that they will break some of these rules.
Yeah. Didn't a lot of schools also adopt zero-tolerance policies following Columbine?
Well, they did in a sense, but actually, even prior to Columbine, there was a federal law known as the Gun-Free Schools Act that requires schools that receive federal money, which is virtually every public school in the United States receives some form of federal monies, to suspend or expel students who bring a gun to school. So that's been in place, and we don't really have a problem with that, with students who are bringing a weapon to school of any kind for the purpose of harming other students or staff at the school. But in the example that you cited, where a student brought a knife to school for a science project demonstration, zero tolerance rules are written in such a way that they had no choice but to suspend that student. We see similar things happening with zero tolerance policies toward drugs. I can give you many examples of that, but one in particular stands out in my mind as being antithetical in its application to what we want our schools to be able to do. There was this spring a 13-year-old girl brought Midol to school with her for cramping related to her menstrual cycle. The school rule is, and their zero tolerance policy is, no drugs. That if there is a drug that's necessary for you to have at school, it's brought by your parents to the school nurse, who then dispenses it during the day as needed. Well, that sounds like a simple and easy policy. But if you're a 13-year-old girl who is very, very embarrassed about the onset of a menstrual cycle, who's embarrassed about cramping, and doesn't want anyone to know about this, and you bring Midol to school and you conceal it in your purse, should you really be expelled from school?
Yeah. Let me hold you there. We have a weather break, and then we'll continue talking about why more schools should alter their zero tolerance policies, according to our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. Coming up this afternoon, At Issue with Ben Marins. On this, the first day of summer, find out how to enjoy the season right here in Wisconsin. Ben and his guest will talk about all that our great state has to offer. That's coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking with Cecil Reynolds, a professor of education psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University and chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero Tolerance Task Force, who agrees with a trend that is happening in many schools around the country, schools deciding to alter their zero tolerance policies. Zero tolerance policies typically mandate severe punishments for weapons and drug offenses, regardless of the circumstances. And as an Associated Press article this week pointed out, things like this are happening in some states. Fifth graders in California who adorned their mortar boards with tiny toy plastic soldiers this week to support troops in Iraq were forced to cut off the miniature weapons on the toys. A Utah boy was suspended for giving his cousin a cold pill that had been prescribed to him and the other student. In Rhode Island, a kindergartner was suspended for bringing a plastic knife to school so he could cut cookies. So lawmakers and school board members in many states say that these strict policies in schools have resulted in too many punishments that lack common sense, and they are seeking to loosen the restrictions. We wonder if you agree or not with this trend and with our guest who says that these zero tolerance policies should be amended or altered. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 1234, in Madison 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Professor Reynolds, what is it that you think should happen in the schools that have these zero tolerance policies, in specifically, rather than just alter them? What should schools do about these types of situations? If kids are bringing weapons to school but not threatening people, kids are bringing prescription drugs to school and taking them, or maybe even giving them to another student?
Well, certainly when a student gives a prescription drug to another student, that presents a different kind of problem as opposed to a student bringing to school an over-the-counter medication in particular, like my Midol example earlier, that is legal for that student to purchase, legal for them to possess, and legal for them to use. That, to me, creates a very, very different circumstance. And zero-tolerance policies have typically been written in a very rigid way, which, as you said, does not consider the context or the circumstances at all. And one of the things that we've recommended, in perhaps in more technical terms in our report, is that individuals apply common sense and that they consider the context of the violation and they consider the child's developmental level. We need to think about intent as well. And some of the things that have resulted in suspensions are wonderful teaching opportunities. The 13-year-old girl I mentioned near the opening of the show, what a wonderful opportunity that would have been for a school to really do their job as a school and have this 13-year-old girl meet with her parent and the school nurse to review the issues surrounding this and why she was so embarrassed to follow the rule, and use that as a moment of education as opposed to a moment of punishment. Another wonderful example of how those policies can run awry has to do with a 10-year-old girl, which I believe was in Colorado, who at the lunch break opened her lunchbox and found in it a knife that her mother had sent for her to use to cut an apple.
Mm.
She knew the rule about no weapons at school. She immediately took the knife to her teacher and gave it to her. She was expelled from school for the remainder of the year for having brought a weapon to school. Now, what I would want to ask the administrators who invoke that policy is, what did you teach this 10-year-old girl, and what do you want the school to teach her? I think what we taught her was, if you make a mistake or you discover a mistake that's been made, whatever you do, cover it up, hide it, don't let anybody know about it.
Yeah.
But she did exactly what we would want a student to do. She realized there was a problem, that a rule had been broken. She immediately went to the teacher, did her best to remedy that. And I think she should have been rewarded in some way for that, as opposed to being punished.
That sounds ridiculous. Isn't that kind of a lame excuse, though, for school officials to say, well, the policy says no weapons, so even in this case, we have to expel the student? Can't the policy be there with and still be applied using common sense?
Well, it can be, but remember that one of the purposes of zero-tolerance policies was to remove judgment from the process. And that's where the whole system falls apart. Children are, in fact, children. They don't have the reasoning skills of adults. They don't understand things at an adult level. And they are going to do things also impulsively. They're going to be embarrassed sometimes about things that they're required to do. Children behave very differently, and they think about things differently. And we need to use the schools to educate kids about these things and not demonstrate to them that there's no place for common sense in evaluating what you do, that why you do something is unimportant. Well, that is purely antithetical to the entire American concept of justice. If you look at the criminal statutes in every state in the United States of America, you will find law after law after law that speaks to the concept of intent. And punishments are very different. You can commit a crime without intending to. There are crimes like criminal negligence. But in fact, if there is intent, there's an escalation of punishment and an escalation of charge. So our criminal statutes throughout our nation consider the concept of intent. Zero tolerance policies in schools do not consider intent. They consider all infractions to be equal and deserving of equal punishment.
Let me bring in a caller, Mike in Mequon. Hi, you're on the air.
Say, I'm really glad to listen to this show this morning, Joy, and to your guest, because I think you're right on target. It seems to me and strikes me both as a principal of a school and one who works as an adjunct professor at several universities with principal preparation, that some boards have really taken leave of their senses on this topic. A lot of it has to do with how you want to spend your time. You mentioned the little girl with the knife. I can remember, say, 15 years ago where a student accidentally had brought a jackknife to school. Lived across the street from the school, had the parents into the school within about 15 minutes. We resolved the problem, and we moved on. To me, the overriding issue is the child or the child's behavior a danger to themselves and others? And then, as you mentioned, what's developmentally appropriate, and where's the learning opportunity in all of this? So again, I thank you for your...
I thank you for calling. You do not, in Mequon, Mike, have these zero-tolerance policies?
We have policies regarding safety, and we have policies regarding discipline, major and minor discipline, but I don't want to suggest for a moment that we don't take safety seriously, that we don't take violence seriously, and all of that, and that we would not engage the police when necessary. But to think that a child, say that, and this happened in a district not too far from here, brings a dinosaur squirt gun to school, and all of a sudden it's a major disciplinary moment. Quite honestly, I don't get it.
Professor Reynolds.
Well, I think Mike has hit on exactly the kind of things that we've been talking about, that there has to be flexibility in these policies that takes context into account, and we also have to think about children's developmental levels, as he says, and the expertise of teachers and school administrators needs to be improved in these areas. In many states now, and Texas, where I reside, is one of them, have taken child development courses out of the requirements to become certified to be a teacher. And I think that's a serious mistake. We tend to think that people just know about children's development and about their cognitive levels and about how children think. And people really don't understand that until they've studied it and had coursework in that area. So I think we need to improve the expertise of teachers and school administrators in their understanding of how children think.
Time for a news break from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about zero tolerance policies in schools coming up after that news. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Thursday, June the 21st, the first day of summer. And we're talking about no tolerance or zero tolerance policies in schools. Zero tolerance policies typically mandate severe punishments and discipline, like even expulsion from school for bringing a weapon to school or any kind of drug offense. Many schools now, though, are reconsidering these policies after incidents like in Rhode Island, a kindergartner was suspended for bringing a plastic knife to school so he could cut cookies. Our guest this hour says schools should apply common sense and should be altering these zero tolerance policies, and we wonder if you agree or not, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Cecil Reynolds is a professor of education psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University, chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero Tolerance Task Force. And our next caller is Tony in Greenwood. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. There's a Catholic high school in Northern Illinois that have just instituted a zero tolerance for drug usage, and coupled with mandatory drug testing, and if there's any infraction, the student's automatically expelled. I really have difficulty with that on two levels. The first of which is that I think that there could be tremendous opportunity in life if these kids' educations weren't interrupted so abruptly. And second of all, I feel that a government or institution should not usurp a parent's rights to parent. And when an institution or a government starts intervening on such a dramatic level, then I think it really affects family structure and everything that we've grown accustomed to in this country. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Professor Reynolds?
Well, I think there are several issues surrounding a policy like that. It's very different when a student is using a drug that is illegal or prohibited under some rule or law versus bringing drugs to school to distribute them to other students. In the case of a student who is bringing drugs to school and distributing them to others, then certainly a much more harsh form of punishment and a different level of response is required. But if you have a student who has used drugs off campus, in particular, and fails a drug test, and you suspend them from school, what you've done is, again, antithetical to the educational process. The statistics are clear that students who are suspended or expelled at some point under a zero-tolerance policy have a much higher probability of dropping out of school and not graduating from high school. If we look at the association between high school dropout and drug usage and drug addiction and other problems as an adult, there's a very, very clear association. Now, while we can't say that that's causal, we can't say one causes the other, but clearly the association is there, and it creates a lot of other public health issues for individuals who don't finish high school. So what we've done is taken a student who very likely is in greater need of education, in greater need of educational assistance, one where the school could make a very different response and contact the family, bring the family into this, and make a joint effort between the school and the family to identify the reasons why this student is using drugs and to invoke some kind of plan, some kind of positive plan to change that student's life, educate them, and get them through school, which is going to have a much more positive impact not only on this child, but on society at large.
What about this example that was cited in this Associated Press article about a Utah boy? I don't know all the details of this case, but he was suspended for giving his cousin a cold pill that had been prescribed to both students. So this was his cousin. He had a cold pill. He knew his cousin also used this cold pill, and he gave his cousin a cold pill. Is this an example of blindly applying the zero-tolerance policy, or was this appropriate to suspend him?
Well, I think we'd have to know a little bit more about the circumstances to know if it was appropriate to suspend him. Certainly the administrator thought so under the zero-tolerance policy rules. Suspension in that particular case sounds harsh to me. It sounds, again, like a circumstance to me where the school could have taken the role of being an educator and have educated the student about that, educated them about the problems with giving a medication to another student, even if that other student had a prescription for it, and why we don't allow anyone other than pharmacists, adults, people who really understand what they're doing and understand about dosage schedules and things like that to administer drugs to individuals. So I think it was a good time for an educational response. On the other hand, had that educational response been attempted in the past, and this was a second offense, then a more stringent punishment should have been applied.
Mm-hmm. Dave in Wyawega is with us next. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm an attorney, and several years ago I was asked to represent a young man in a neighboring community who on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving during the hunting season for deer hunting, the school there was going to suspend classes at noon, and being very excited about the opportunity to go hunting in the afternoon, he drove into the parking lot with a cased gun and his orange suit, no ammunition, and it was discovered somebody passed by or whatever, I can't remember the circumstances, but in any event, he was then suspended for the rest of the year, had to seek other alternative means of education for the balance of the year because of the zero-tolerance policy that existed there, and it seemed rather unfair to me at the time, and I guess it still does.
Reaction to that, Professor Reynolds?
Well, I think that's a circumstance where you see a young man who exercised very, very poor judgment and suffered undue consequences as a result of that poor judgment. And that's what teenagers do. They exercise poor judgment, and they do that a lot. And again, the school should have evaluated the context of this, the intent of that, and the school may have been acting, I don't know if David's still on the line, if he is, maybe he could tell us, the schools may have attempted to defend that under the Gun-Free Schools Act, which actually contains an out for that and allows the school to evaluate the intent and whether or not there was a real threat. Even though the student had brought a gun to school, it was unloaded, it was in a locked environment.
That was not raised at the time. Ironically, if he would have parked his car on a street just outside the school parking lot, he would have been exempt from that whole process.
So the school may well have been misinterpreting the Gun-Free Schools Act in a situation like that. But, again, I think it's always prudent on the part of schools, if they have children's best interest at heart in these circumstances, to evaluate the context, to evaluate the intent, to see what was really going on here.
Yeah. We're talking about a backlash going on right now against zero-tolerance policies in schools. There are lawmakers and school board members in several states that are trying to loosen the restrictions on these zero-tolerance policies that usually require severe punishments for bringing weapons to school or drug offenses or violence offenses at school. We are talking with the chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero Tolerance Task Force about these policies and what alterations should be made to them. Cecil Reynolds is a professor of educational psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University, and we welcome your questions for him and your views on this issue. Do you think that these zero tolerance policies make sense or not? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, June the 21st. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 7, according to a report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Wisconsin is among 10 states that account for 93% of all cases of Lyme disease in the country. I'll talk with a guest physician coming up after 7 o'clock about how to recognize, prevent, and treat Lyme disease. That's coming up after 7. Right now, we're talking about zero-tolerance policies in schools and a trend now to amend these zero-tolerance policies. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Cecil Reynolds, a professor of education psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University, chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero-Tolerance Task Force. And Scott in Menasha is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. You know, they tried to do a good thing, and this just turned out to harm some innocent people.
why can't they change it from zero tolerance to, like, minimal tolerance or disciplinary tolerance or two strikes? You know, if somebody accidentally brings a plastic knife or something into school, warn them, don't do it again. Instead of the zero tolerance, change it so somehow the discipline can be adjusted to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Professor Reynolds?
Well, that is exactly one of the recommendations in our task force report for how these policies ought to be modified. We believe there should be a graduated escalation of disciplinary policy, and that students who are repeat offenders, where educational approaches have been attempted, should be subjected to more strenuous punishments. And we think that only makes good sense. It also is consistent, I think, with the American sense of justice. And we think all of that has really gotten askew in the concept of zero tolerance.
I was looking at an article. This is way back in April of 2002 when the Madison School Board amended its zero-tolerance policy. The Madison School Board had a zero-tolerance policy in place, and I mentioned this example at the top of the hour, and a boy had been expelled because he brought a knife to school. It was a steak knife to school to cut an onion for a science demonstration. And there was a big outcry when he was suspended. The school board voted 4-3 in favor of altering the policy, but the alteration changed the policy to suspend students in non-threatening cases. If a student brought a butter knife to school or a knife to school and wasn't threatening anybody, but it was to suspend the student for 5 days as opposed to the old policy of expelling the offender for 1 year. So there's still not a whole lot of tolerance for mistakenly bringing a knife to school.
No, there's not. And on the issue of suspension, I think we have some discussion of this in our report, that's a very, very ineffective means of disciplining kids even who are disruptive and who don't want to be at school. Because what you do with that is you take a student who doesn't want to be there and you punish them by telling them they don't have to. And we don't think that's a very effective means of education. So we have talked about in-school suspension programs where students continue their education, but they're isolated for some period of time from other students. And they're under closer supervision. And we've also talked about, in our report, where students have done something that has created some kind of real damage, that has damaged property or created some kind of destruction, the concept of restorative justice. And teaching kids those things while they're in school and having them engage in those opportunities. But really doing everything we can while keeping schools safe to keep kids in school and assure that they actually do receive a basic education.
Our next caller is B in Beaver Dam. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Excellent program again this morning. This brings to mind my daughter's daycare. Prior to their last state inspection, we were allowed to send Tylenol if they were teething or whatever, the school, and sign a med slip, and the school would call us if they were going to administer it. And when the state came through, they said, no, we have zero tolerance for this now. You have to send all this back home. So it's even in our daycares that we can't send Tylenol and that type of stuff. And the school's not allowed to administer it anymore.
That seems pretty ridiculous, doesn't it, Professor Reynolds?
Yeah.
Joy, I think you've hit it exactly.
Well, so your baby's just supposed to deal with that pain?
Supposed to deal with the pain. And if they spike a fever.
Well, yeah. Is there concern that there might be an overdose and lawsuits and that kind of thing?
We don't know what it is, because when we'd bring it, we'd have to put on the slip what the dosage is for our child. And, they would call us before they'd administer it, if they can get a hold of us. But if they can't, they were given the permission to administer it. Even cough syrup, when they're just coughing and, it's nothing contagious. The school's not allowed to give it.
Yeah. Does this apply to prescription medications as well?
Prescriptions are still allowed, but we have to sign for them every day.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, Professor Reynolds, if you know, you don't know the circumstances with this specific preschool or daycare and Wisconsin law, but are some of these laws in place zero tolerance, so they're, you know, there isn't any accusations of unfair treatment, that everyone's treated the same, and the threat of lawsuits is diminished?
Well, the claim in zero-tolerance policies is that it is 100% objective and that everyone is treated the same. And that's one of the arguments that people make in favor of zero-tolerance. But in fact, as we've talked about, everyone shouldn't be treated the same. Intent and context are important to the idea of justice. But we also see, and we've evaluated this nationwide, and there are many, many studies on this, that we do see certain groups of children who are suspended at higher rates for the same acts. So we do see that it is not applied in this perfect world that folks see purely objectively and in the same way for everyone.
Yeah. Thank you, B, for the call. Fawn in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a teacher in Madison School District, and I just wanted to touch on the guest comment about that. I completely agree that one rule doesn't fit all students. However, the in-school suspensions versus the out-of-school suspensions, he had mentioned that there needs to be more in-school suspensions because you're just basically rewarding behavior by giving certain students time off from school. But one where most suspensions happen is middle school and high school. And one of the reasons why kids do like to be in school is to be around friends. So that is one positive to the out-of-school suspension. However, I see the point in making more in-school suspensions, but there just simply isn't supervision. A lot of those students that get in-school suspensions need one-on-one supervision or, you know, two kids to one adult because of their bad behaviors. And there just isn't the resource available. So I just wanted your guests to comment on that.
Well, it's really a pay now or pay later scenario. Students who don't graduate from high school who have high dropout rates, which we know kids who have a history of suspension or expulsions have a very high dropout rate, end up at a much higher percentage being a burden on society and draw on societal supports at much higher levels as adults. If we can prevent that by putting more resources into the schools to deal with these issues in the context of the school and bringing the family more into play, into discipline in the school, then we're way ahead of the game financially. So it really is a pay now or pay later. And in contrast to many people who like credit, pay now is cheaper. And we also do need, I think, to have a reconnect with families. I can recall, just to give a brief personal example, my dad was a career Marine and was a drill instructor in the Marine Corps for many years. And the last thing I wanted was to do anything at school that caused him to be called on the phone, to come away from his job at the Marine base and have to come to school. And that was a big incentive to me to follow rules. And as I go out and work in schools now, I see less family involvement. And in part, that's because I see schools being less inviting to families to be involved.
Yeah. Thank you, Fawn, for the call. I'm looking at an article from last month where in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, Sheboygan County, apparently they have had like 10 bomb threats at Sheboygan schools in less than 3 weeks. And authorities said they had enough, and the district attorney announced a zero-tolerance policy against bomb threats. These are kids who would, like, scrawl on the bathroom walls, you know, a bomb's going to go off, evacuate school. Seem appropriate in that case to have a zero-tolerance policy?
Well, that is, in every place that I know of, a violation of criminal law. And would be a violation of juvenile law for a person under the age of 18 or in some states 16. And that's the kind of act that should be dealt with by the juvenile justice system. And schools are doing their job when they contact the juvenile justice system about that. On the other hand, as many of these zero tolerance policies get implemented, schools have gone overboard in involving the juvenile justice system. We have an example of a young man who is diagnosed with a serious emotional disturbance, who's attending special education programs in the public schools. He's riding the bus for children with disabilities, so it's a smaller bus. They have a smaller number of kids on it. And this young man has very poor social skills. He doesn't interact well with others. And some of the other kids are teasing him on the bus. Mm-hmm. He screams at them that if they don't shut up, he's going to beat them up. It's a verbal threat. He makes that in that context. We know he has a diagnosis of emotional disturbance. The bus driver stops, calls 911, and he's arrested and mm-hmm. charged with making terroristic threats.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We'll have to leave it there for now. I do appreciate your being with us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
Cecil Reynolds, professor of education psychology and neuroscience at Texas A&M University, chair of the American Psychological Association's Zero Tolerance Task Force, which advocates altering the zero tolerance policy, saying one size doesn't fit all. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.